From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Thursday, September 19th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Hear yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. What do you say we get things started officially with...
The Daily Denogram.
Here you go. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. I like this. When dogs leap onto your bed, it's because they adore you. When cats leap onto your bed, it's because they adore your bed. Let's move along now with the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted History.
Here we go.
Gather round, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
I hope so.
Some cool, some not so cool.
Make it worth
just
while.
The same. You need to know your Twisted History.
Okay.
You might be quizzed.
Oh, stop. I'm not going to be quizzed and you know it. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1982, Scott Fallman posted the first documented emoticons on the Carnegie Mellon University bulletin board system. Of course, hundreds of other emoticons surfaced shortly thereafter, and a good many of them are stuff we can't describe here. Certainly not in polite company. And it was on this day in 1985, Tipper Gore and other political wives formed the Parents Music Resource Center as Frank Zappa, John Denver, and other musicians testified at U.S. congressional hearings on obscenity and rock music. John Denver? What would he know about rock music? For that matter, what would he know about obscenity?
Finally, some censorship we can get behind.
When I say that something doesn't surprise me, that doesn't mean that I approve of it, you know, or that it's okay, or that it's acceptable. But it doesn't surprise me that right away, the day after President Trump had a second assassination attempt leveled against him, that certain vocal Democrats are out raising the temperature of the rhetoric again. And one of the first was Hillary Clinton. She made some remarks on MSNBC claiming that Trump's politics of hate and division endanger national security. And, of course, those remarks have sparked some controversy on our side, of course. A lot of critics arguing that Clinton's words are hypocritical, with some accusing her of continuing to hold a grudge from her 2016 defeat. That's okay. She wants to hold a grudge. I understand sour grapes. I also understand that Hillary Clinton is probably every bit as evil as Barack Obama, because that's what we're dealing with on the other side. Pardon my rhetoric. I'm going to raise the temperature of the rhetoric a little bit. We are dealing with evil on the left, outright evil. They want to trash our Constitution. They want to take away your rights to free speech. They want to take away your guns. They want to commandeer your kids away from you and remove from you the freedom to raise your children as you choose. So let's not forget that. So Trump supporters point to her own political past as evidence that she's the one who's fueling the division. And Clinton's accusation that Trump threatens national security is seen by most people on the right is dangerous rhetoric in itself, aimed at undermining Trump's growing 2024 campaign. Now, the other night, Trump had a very successful, well, it was supposed to be a town hall, turned out to be a huge rally in Flint, Michigan, where he told the people of Flint who've been suffering for years, ever since GM closed that Buick plant, how many decades ago? That used to be the Buick capital of the world. That's where they made most of the world's Buicks, was Flint, Michigan, up until hard times hit us with the Democrats. And Trump was over there just basically telling him he wants to turn Flint, Michigan back into the manufacturing powerhouse that it once was. I want to read for you a couple of notes here from a tweet called Wall Street Apes. And they put three videos in here, and I'd love to play the audio for you, but it's all chopped up. So I'm just going to read basically the summary. In the first video, there's Hillary Clinton calling for Trump supporters to be thrown in prison for sharing misinformation. Once again, who's going to be the judge of what is and isn't misinformation? Second video, it's Kamala Harris saying she was going to end free speech because she didn't believe that the various social media platforms should each have their own individual rules. They all should be uniform. And then in the third video, New York Democrat calling for Trump supporters to be put in re-education camps. I don't know who that gal is, but re-education camps. I mean, so listen to that rhetoric right there. One, calling for Trump supporters to be thrown in jail for sharing misinformation. There you go, a slap against our First Amendment. The second one, Harris saying she was going to just end free speech. And in the third, a New York Democrat calling for Trump supporters to be put in re-education camps. Now, is there any question here on your part as to who we are dealing with? Now, Clinton, who's maintained a vocal opposition to Trump ever since Trump showed up on the Republican side of the political spectrum, reiterated claims that his divisive politics embolden extremists and weaken the country both internally and globally. So let's just forget for a moment that everybody knows that Hillary Clinton is full of crap. Conservative commentators have been quick to fire back at her, saying that it's Clinton who poses a threat by continuing to stoke political conflict. And it's true. She's even worse than Barack Obama. I mean, Obama has pretty much stayed in the shadows, kind of running the administration from a distance. But Hillary, every time you show her a camera or a microphone, she opens her foul mouth and she really pollutes the verbal landscape. A lot of people are saying that her persistent critiques of Trump are attempts to stay relevant and to distract from her own controversial past, including her role in foreign policy decisions that not only compromised U.S. security, they were decisions that were ill-made. No one with a healthy brain would have made the decisions that woman has made. I'm just having a rough time controlling my language when it comes to Hillary Clinton. I mean, if everybody needs somebody they can hate, I believe in hate, not wholesale hate. I don't believe that you hate a group of people for their religious beliefs or for the way they dress or for the language they speak. You don't do that. Hatred, to my mind, is a survival technique. If you're in combat, you got to hate your enemy. Now, when the war is over, you got to win the hearts and minds of your former enemy, like we did after World War II. Don't you find it kind of interesting that as a nation, we share deep friendships with both of our mortal enemies from World War II? You can't find any better friends and allies than you can out of Japan and Germany. My God, they're so pro-American. Go visit either of those two countries. Heck, visit them both and see how warmly you are greeted. Because that's part of the history we share with those nations in the years since World War II. Yeah, we beat the hell out of them. We had to get them to stop. And then we helped them rebuild. Not just the physical stuff, we helped them build their morale and their pride in being the people that they are, being German, being Japanese. Great nations. Great friends, great allies. But right here within our own country, we have this war going on. It's a culture war. It's a political war. It's not a nice war. And I wish I could tell you, with as much reading as I do, with as much research as I do for these 30-minute blogcasts every day, I wish I could really tell you where I think this nation is heading. I have a gut feeling, but I don't like to go on gut feeling. I mean, I may use my gut feeling when it comes to little things around the house here, okay. But when I'm trying to dispense advice or trying to warn people about things, I like to go on something far more solid than a gut feeling. I do have a gut feeling that after the election, no matter which way it goes, we're going to face some violence in this country. To what degree, I don't know. I think if Trump wins, there's going to be a lot of violence. It'll be just like the summer of 2020 again. If Kamala Harris wins, there's going to be some violence, but I don't think it's going to be nearly to that degree. But we've got to keep this country from falling into the hands of the kind of a government that Kamala Harris wants to build for us. It's awful. Now, Colin Rugg tweeted that Hillary Clinton called Trump a dictator who can't be given another chance to do harm to our country. And again, she said this just one day after the second assassination attempt on Trump. She made the comments during an interview with far-left host Rachel Maddow. And it's frightening stuff. But when it comes from the mouth of Hillary Clinton, it should be expected. Let me read the post. Hillary Clinton calls Trump a dictator who can't be given another chance to do harm to our country. Really? Harm to our country? What kind of harm did he do to our country? There were no new wars. He even paid a visit to Kim Jong-un of North Korea. Gave us the best economy we've had in our lifetimes. How did he harm our country? You know, the fact of the matter is that Hillary Clinton is full of crap. She should be kept away from a microphone and a camera. But I'll still defend her right to be there. Anyhow, Colin Rugg says, Hillary Clinton calls Trump a dictator who can't be given another chance to do harm to our country just one day after a second assassination attempt. Clinton made the comments during an interview with far-left host Rachel Maddow. Quoting her, he says, I don't understand why it's so difficult for the press to have a consistent narrative about how dangerous Trump is. Oh, she's turning down the rhetoric, all right. Quoting her again, the object in this case is Donald Trump, his demagoguery, his danger to our country. Americans need to understand that they have to take Trump both seriously and literally. He said what he wants to do. He and his allies with Project 2025, his desire to be a dictator. Again, let me state, Trump has distanced himself about as far as he can from Project 2025. But that doesn't matter. Hillary's going to sit there and lie. She's going to dispense misinformation, even though she thinks those of us who might dispense misinformation should be thrown in jail. The woman is such a bitch. She also said Americans have to be willing to endure what, frankly, is discomforting and to some extent kind of painful to take him at his word and to be outraged by what he represents. We can't go back and give this very dangerous man another chance to do harm to our country and the world. Now, I don't blame Hillary for saying this. She's still pissed that he beat her like a drum in 2016. That's sour grapes. That's all it is. But here's who I blame. I'm blaming MSNBC for putting her on the air, giving her a platform. Of course, the fact that MSNBC gives people like Joe Scarborough and Rachel Maddow and what's his name, that pinheaded, washed-up actor who sits there every evening. They give people like that a platform. Again, it's freedom of speech. But that woman is she's terrible news. Thank God for Trump allies, because they, as well as a lot of Republican voters, have long dismissed Clinton's warnings as politically motivated sour grapes, and they argue that her accusations are an attempt to deflect attention from her own failings and that Trump's policies, especially on border security and military strength, were in fact designed to protect the nation. So as she goes about her life, attempting to portray Trump as a threat, critics point to her failures, including the Benghazi scandal, as evidence that she lacks credibility on issues of national security. She always has. She always will. That woman should never be anywhere near the White House. So, this ongoing war of words shows just how deeply the nation remains divided along political lines. You can go out on the street and you can find that division probably right there in your hometown, wherever you live. Clinton's continued targeting of Trump only serves to keep tensions on the edge, especially as Trump gains momentum in this election cycle. And he is gaining momentum on a daily basis. It's getting better. So you got a lot of people who believe that her comments aren't just about Trump's rhetoric, but about undermining his political success. Oh, and his success in the political arena has been very successful. It's been very high. Trump supporters remain pretty much steadfast that Clinton's repeated attempts to cast him as a villain are merely a continuation of her efforts to invalidate his presidency and to distract from her own controversies. All of that true, but one thing I'd like to point out here, too, is that with the language she uses and the urgency behind her inflection as she says the things she does about Donald Trump, really, it points out to the fact that she's probably almost desperate, because now she's not just making statements. The woman is shrieking. This is so bizarre. Back on Tuesday, dozens of Hezbollah members were seriously wounded in Lebanon when their communication pagers unexpectedly exploded. Yes, there are some places on the planet, kids, where pagers are still in use. Now, the incident took place in several locations, including the southern suburbs of Beirut, known as Hezbollah's stronghold, and areas in southern Lebanon. Now, witnesses reported scenes of chaos as injured members were transported to local hospitals for emergency treatment. Initial reports suggest that more than 1,000 people were injured in the blast. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but it affected Hezbollah fighters, medics, and other civilians. Hezbollah members have long used pagers as a primary communication tool, particularly in areas where cellular devices are deemed too vulnerable to interception. So there's a reason behind that madness. And security sources have described this as one of the most significant breaches Hezbollah has experienced in recent years. And of course, it's all being blamed on Israel. Did they do it or didn't they do it? Who knows? But the explosions happened around 3:30 p.m. local time, and Hezbollah officials pointed the finger at Israel, accusing them of being behind the attack. I mean, anybody surprised by that? Of course not. Israeli officials, following their usual protocol, declined to comment on the incident. But the timing coincides with rising tensions along the Lebanon-Israel border, where both sides have exchanged fire several times already this year. And videos circulating on social media show the aftermath of the explosions, with injuries concentrated on the hands and arms where the pagers were likely being held. In some cases, victims were also seen with leg injuries, suggesting the devices may have been in their pockets when they detonated. Lebanon's Prime Minister Najib Mikati has called for a full-scale investigation into the event, while Hezbollah has launched its own internal inquiry. Iranian officials, including their ambassador to Lebanon, were also among those injured. Hezbollah's military strength is often backed by Iranian resources, so that would stand to reason. So it makes the presence of Iranian officials in Hezbollah-controlled areas unsurprising. As Hezbollah and Lebanese authorities work to understand how the breach occurred, regional tensions continue to fire up. They're escalating. Hezbollah's political and military wings have often found themselves at the center of Lebanon's security dynamics, frequently clashing with Israeli forces in southern Lebanon. I would imagine that's starting to wear on the Israelis. Analysts are warning that this incident could provoke further retaliatory actions from Hezbollah against Israel, Which, in all fairness, you have to wonder, does Israel ever think about this stuff in advance of some of the stuff they're doing? But, man, I tell you what, I cannot bring myself to be anti-Israel in any way, shape, or form. I mean, the Israelis are the most targeted people on the planet. But this kind of thing does, in all fairness, add another layer to the already volatile situation. Here again, I always use as my analogy that old spy versus spy cartoon strip in Mad Magazine. It was so funny, but it was so true. And when I was reading Mad Magazine, of course, that was during the height of the Cold War with Russia. Now, this attack on Hezbollah's communication network managed to hit at a time of heightened Israeli-Hezbollah tensions, with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu considering a broader offensive against the group. I mean, come on, face it. Hezbollah has been a pain in the butt for decades. Hezbollah's leadership has been very vocal about their readiness to respond to any Israeli incursions. The group's been central to the conflict in Lebanon for decades, viewed mostly by the diplomatic community as a state within a state due to its military capabilities and political influence. So the scale of the pager explosions and the number of injuries mark a serious blow to Hezbollah's operational capabilities. What I'm trying to figure out from a technical standpoint is, how did they pull this off? Because, first of all, the devices, the pagers, have been a reliable form of communication for Hezbollah for a long time, particularly in military operations where mobile phone usage is minimized to prevent tracking and surveillance. But from a technical standpoint, how did they get these pagers to explode? I wanted to bring this story to you yesterday, but just didn't have room. I hate to go over 30 minutes on these things. So I wanted you to know about this, though. There was a major escalation of the conflict there as Yemen's Iran-backed Houthi rebels claimed responsibility for launching a hypersonic ballistic missile that struck Israel early Sunday morning. And the missile reportedly hit a military target in Tel Aviv. It was one missile, not a lot of damage. But just the same, I wanted to tell you about this because this signals a direction that this conflict, which is what it is right now, it's not an all-out war yet, but it's a conflict. It's another conflict here in the world that we need to keep our eye on. And I don't know, it's kind of disconcerting because Iran wouldn't have the money to provide these kinds of weapons if it weren't for the fact that the Biden-Harris administration and the Obama administration before it hadn't been giving so much money and aid and comfort to Iran. We have nothing in common with Iran. Maybe the Iranian people, the people on the street, but certainly not the government. So we can expect more of this. It's going to happen again. The missile reportedly hit this military target in Tel Aviv. And this is the first time that the Houthis successfully deployed a weapon like this against Israel. They'll do it again. Now, this is the technical side that you need to be aware of. The missile flew over 2,000 kilometers before hitting its target, evaded Israel's sophisticated defense systems, including the Iron Dome and Arrow anti-missile systems. But that is what hypersonic missiles are designed to do. They travel at speeds exceeding Mach 5, and they're notoriously difficult to intercept due to their high speed and ability to change trajectory or direction mid-flight. So despite attempts by Israeli and U.S. naval forces to intercept the missile, it successfully reached its destination. And fragments were later discovered in the central Israeli town of Modi'in. Now, this attack comes at a time when tensions are escalating on an almost daily basis between Israel and these Iranian-backed forces throughout the region. Israeli Defense Forces, you know, the IDF, confirmed that air raid sirens were triggered across central Israel following the missile's launch, but the IDF reported no casualties because the missile struck an open area, fragmenting midair. And despite the lack of immediate damage, this incident underscores the growing capabilities of the Houthis, who've long been viewed as a proxy force for Iran. I mean, why do the fighting yourself when you can find a bunch of barbarians to do it for you, right? Well, that's the way Iran is carrying on. And the Houthis, officially known as Ansar Allah, have been involved in a protracted conflict with Saudi Arabia and Saudi's allies since 2015. So their growing military arsenal, reportedly supplied in part by Iran, has allowed them to extend their reach beyond the Arabian Peninsula. I mean, just last year, the Houthis claimed to have tested their first hypersonic missile. And that was a development widely believed to be influenced by Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps, which unveiled its own hypersonic missile, the Fatah 2, in 2023. Then, of course, there was a statement following the attack. A Houthi spokesperson warned of further strikes against Israeli military and civilian targets. And of course, that announcement coincided with the upcoming anniversary of Hamas, October 7th, attack on Israel last year. And this is a date that the Houthis have previously used to justify their military actions. And they've launched hundreds of ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, and drones toward Israel in recent months as part of their support for Gaza. Then there's the international community, including the United States, condemning the attack. U.S. naval forces stationed in the Red Sea were unable to intercept this missile. And that, of course, raises concerns about the limitations of conventional missile defense systems against emerging hypersonic threats. The failure to stop this missile, despite multiple interception attempts, prompted Israel and U.S., Israeli and U.S. officials, to reevaluate their defense strategies in the region. But then again, I'm sure that's something they have to do on a daily basis. And meanwhile, Israel's bolstered its naval presence in the Red Sea, deploying some warships and anti-missile systems to prevent further strikes. I'm not sure that they can prevent hypersonic missile strikes, though. And the Houthis have previously launched missile and drone attacks on Israeli targets, including an attempt to hit the strategic Red Sea port of Eilat earlier this year. And these attacks are part of a broader effort by Iranian proxies to destabilize the region. You know, Iran is a real stinker in this thing. They continue to support groups like Hezbollah and Hamas in their confrontations with Israel. The introduction of hypersonic missiles now, though, into this conflict marks a pretty significant escalation with the potential to further destabilize an already volatile region. As Israel braces for more attacks, of course, questions remain about how Israel and their allies are going to adapt to the growing missile threat from Yemen and other Iranian-aligned groups. My guess is they're going to have to depend on emerging technologies. To the Comedy Corner with Megan Hanley.
I come from a big Irish Catholic family, so that's always been our excuse for drinking. We're like, we're Irish, that's why we're drunk, woo! And then my family went to Ireland and we're like, we're not Irish. We're just drunk Americans getting out of control. My family got thrown out of bars in Ireland. You know how out of control you have to be for the Irish to cut you off? We were out drinking and this old Irish man came up to us and he's like, that's not how we leave bars in Ireland. And we were like, whatever, high five, headlock. And he was like, no, seriously, get out. And we were like, sorry, Father. I'm a big white wine drinker. That's my drink of choice because I feel like it fits my look. Thank you. Thank you. I'm like, hey, is there a PTA meeting later? I'll be there. I'll bring a box Pinot. It'll be great. When's the next soccer game? More of a Cabernet, but still. And then I show up and people are like, where's your kid? I'm like, oh, I don't have any. I am just here for the divorced dads. Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. I know they're probably not here tonight. I know, because it's a Saturday. Unless it's their other weekend. All I'm saying is I can be a mom 4 days a month. I love that. That took a sec. That's what I'm looking for, though. I'm looking for a divorced dad, a guy that's, like, broken down, like, beaten down by life, like, just exhausted with good health care. That's the payoff, you know? When you're younger, you're like, oh, maybe somebody looks good with their shirt off, you know? Maybe hair. You get older, you're just like Blue Cross Blue Shield. That's it. Right? When you're younger, a friend with benefits is a friend you hook up with. You get older, you're like, no, seriously, what kind of benefits do you have? Because I have wisdom teeth and I'm willing to negotiate. I would love to go to a chiropractor. That would be amazing. My friend was embarrassed to tell me about a guy she was dating. And I'm like, why? She's like, you're going to make fun of him. I was like, why? I was like, what does he do? And she's like, well, he's a garbage man. I'm like, that's a union job. That's a great job. I'm like, plus he's up early. He's a go-getter.
Make it a terrific Thursday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blondcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower, and you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.